This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. My name is Shane Told. Welcome to another episode of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, a show where I talk to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a professional rock and roll band. And this week, great show with a true pro, Mr. John Henry of Darkest Hour. What is Darkest Hour? Is Darkest Hour a metal band, a metalcore band, a punk band? What are they? I think they're a punk band. We talk about it in the interview. I think they are very much a punk band. I love Darkest Hour. I've loved them for the better part of like 15, 16, 17 years. They are awesome. I'm really, really stoked to talk to John on his ride from Los Angeles to Las Vegas in a van. Thank you very much for bearing with me last week. I actually took a week off on Easter. It was lovely. I spent some time with my band. We were on tour with Good Charlotte. That just wrapped up. I'm pleased to say Good Charlotte, terrific people. The Madden Brothers were really nice. They went out of their way to take care of us. It was a really fun tour. Thanks to everybody in Canada that came out to the shows. Up next, I have my solo tour with River Oaks, which is starting in the middle of May. I start in Chicago on May 10th, Las Vegas on May 12th, Anaheim on May 13th, San Diego on May 14th, and Los Angeles on May 15th. RiverOaksMusic.com. We got VIP. We have regular general admission tickets. They're like $13. So please go to there. Please buy a ticket. Support me. It really does mean a lot, and I will be hanging out at the shows to talk. If you guys want to come up and say, hey, I love your podcast, or you're a loser, I hate your show, whatever you want to do, come say hi. It will be so much fun. I love doing solo shows. After that, Silverstein will be going to South America, and right after that, Warped Tour, baby. The whole damn thing. Warped Tour has a great lineup this year. I'm excited because I think I'm going to be talking to a lot of people on Warped Tour for this podcast. So have a look at the list. Tell me what you guys think, who I should talk to that's on this year's Vans Warped Tour. VansWarpedTour.com. If you're looking for what the band lineup is, you guys should definitely go check it out. And then, of course, you can get in touch with me very easily. Twitter is a great way. It's at LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N. We're on Instagram, at LeadSingerSyndrome. I have a Snapchat, which is Real Shane Told. I know it's a bit of a douchey handle. And, of course, we have old-fashioned email, which is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Feel free to get in touch. Also, if you're a super fan of the show, if one episode a week is not enough for you, we do have the All Access Club, which was launched a few months back. It's going awesome. We have, like, almost 200 members now. We have this Facebook group. Everyone's hanging out on there. It's a really great community. And it's as little as $6 a month to join. You get all this exclusive bonus content. You get to watch me do a Q&A every month. I actually just did one today. You get a bunch of stuff in the mail, including a little sign thingy for me. And if you're interested in Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, the only way to get it is through the All Access Club. So check it out. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. Also, summer's coming. Summer may be even here for you, depending on where you live. If you're going to be doing any shopping at all online, if you're going to be on Amazon, if you're going to be buying some new patio furniture, I don't know, a new barbecue, whatever it is, Amazon's got it. So please, if you're going to use Amazon, I just ask that you use the Amazon affiliate link. How it works is you just go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal, and anything you buy on there, we get 4-6%, and it costs you absolutely nothing. I don't know why they do it, but it's pretty sweet for me, and it really does help us keep the lights on. So between that and the All Access Club, that is how we keep this thing going week after week. Well, almost every week. Anyways, thanks for the love. Thanks for the support. Let's jump in to my conversation with John Henry of Darkest Hour. And one of these days we'll no longer betray.
We won't all look the same way down. And one of these days we'll no longer
Dude, so hey, I'm here with Mr. John Henry of Darkest Fucking Hour. How's your day going, man?
Pretty damn good. I'm on the road to Las Vegas, actually.
Oh, perfect. Are you now? Yeah. I know you live in California now. Are you like a Vegas person? Because some people are not Vegas people.
I am not a Vegas person. I would say far from it, but it's really close, and I have another band I do out here, so we're doing a little day trip out to rock a concert and party a little bit. Well, not really a concert, more like a house show, but
yeah. Yeah, concert. It's all such a funny word, right?
Perspective, when
people are like, are you going to the Darkest Hour concert, man? It's like, has Darkest Hour ever really played a concert? It's more kind of like always just a punk rock show, no matter what.
Of course.
I always like that word, concert. It implies like, I don't know, I picture like a classical artist or something. You know what I mean?
We like to throw it around the van to make ourselves feel special.
I like that.
You know?
Yes, the concert. Yes, tonight, this evening, we're performing.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. No, so you're in the van right now?
I'm in my car.
Oh, cool. Cool. This is perfect. Great. No, it's nice to have you, man. First time on the show. And I've been a big fan of your work for a very, very long time. It's funny. I remember the first time I saw your band. Well, I don't even know if your first record had come out yet. And you played a show here in Canada in Oakville, Ontario. And it was kind of a eye-opening experience for me, actually, like as a fan of hardcore and metal and punk rock, because I never really heard a band marry it quite like you guys did, you know. And I honestly loved
that's kind of our holy trinity, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's such a cool thing. Sure. And you know, I loved At the Gates, you know, and I loved metal and stuff, but I'd never seen anyone put like a sort of punk rock like non-serious twist on it before until you guys.
Fucking A, man. Wait, where'd you say? Oakton?
It was Oakville, Ontario, Canada. My hometown.
Oakville. Was that like in like kind of a large hall or something?
You know, I used to think it was a large hall. It probably holds about 250 people. But yeah, no, absolutely. It wasn't a hall. It was like attached to an arena. And I cannot remember who you guys played with. All the shows from that period of time, they kind of all, you know, just meld together in my mind. But I do remember your show, and I remember I don't know if we'd gotten signed to Victory yet, if Silverstein had, but I remember our drummer got your shirt and he wore it in our very first music video. So there you go.
You're in Silverstein.
I am the singer for Silverstein.
Hell yeah.
I love that we they tell you this stuff. It's great.
No one tells me anything, dude. And I honestly prefer it that way. It's I like to be surprised.
It's totally fine. I had the same thing happen. I had Dennis from Refused on the show, and like I'm a huge Refused fan, and we did it in person, like on the back of his bus, and they were playing in Toronto, like right this venue that's right by the airport, and it was the only time I had to do it. I had to like do the interview, and I had to go right to the airport, and I was flying to Australia to go on a tour. And I said to him, I'm like, after the interview was done, I was like, thanks, man. I'm actually going to the airport right now. He's like, oh, really? Where are you going? I'm going, Australia? He goes, that's crazy. I was like, yeah. You know, my band's playing. He goes, oh, you're in a band? Like, yeah. We've been talking for like 75 minutes, you know?
That's amazing.
It is super funny. So, no. Yes, I'm the singer for Silverstein. And, ex-label mates. From the Victory Records days.
Worst label on earth.
Oh, damn. You're just going right out with it. That's, no, you know, I'll tell you, man, I've had a lot of bands from Victory, frontman on the show, and most people actually are pretty, diplomatic, I guess is the word. So for you to throw it out there like that and really state your mind, I appreciate that.
I don't give a fuck, dude. I'm 37 years old, man.
I'm 36.
Yeah, I'm not. I've always been really bad at not saying what I feel.
So walk me through this. Like, obviously, Victory was the label that gave you your start. They sold some records for you. They did some stuff for you. You Did you guys complete your contract and move on? How did that work?
We're one of the few bands that completed a Victory contract, yes.
We also did.
5 albums.
Damn.
Yeah, 10 years, baby.
And I guess you don't have any contact
still with... haven't seen a royalty check.
Nothing, ever?
Nope.
Wow, that's crazy, isn't it? 5 records.
And this, hundreds of thousands of units sound scanned, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy.
Not one penny. So maybe someday we'll, like, you know, get something from that. I don't know. Not that it's all about the money or anything, you know, but...
Well, it's nice to be able to, you know, eat on tour and stuff, you know? That's nice to have a place to live. I don't know, you know, these are requirements.
Yeah. Not dying is pretty sick, dude. Yeah,
definitely,
you know, like feeding yourself is pretty tight.
Tight, you know? Definitely tight. Yeah, it's funny. No, it's cool, man. And those days, like when you look back on those days, with Tony and everything. Did you talk to Tony anymore?
Do what?
Do you talk to Tony anymore?
Oh hell no. He'll like email with Mike every once in a while when we have to do some business, but I haven't talked to him in forever. He refuses to talk to our manager too and stuff. It's a whole mess, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure you heard about
not the way it should be.
I'm sure you heard about the Data Remember lawsuit. They got like $4 million from Victory. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that. I think there was a few bands got some pretty substantial settlements.
Oh, seriously? I haven't heard of any other ones.
I thought there was a couple other ones.
Oh. Do you know? Do you know who?
I thought PT Bam sued them or something at some point, or maybe they just. I forget. Man.
I think PT Bam, Between the Buried and Me, for people that aren't in the know, I think they were able to get out of their deal. I'm not sure exactly because they had members that weren't in the band anymore or something like that. That's what I heard, but I could be totally making that all.
I also thought that taking back Sundays and I thought they and Hawthorne Heights and stuff. I thought they all sued him too at some point.
Yeah, they did. I don't know. I don't really know what happened with those. They were kind of kept under wraps, but I don't know. We never did. We went through the whole. We did 4 records, and we did it, and we moved on, and we're still around, and that's. That's kind of a cool thing, I think, is like, you know, your band has survived, you know, this ever-changing music industry, ever-changing, you know, what's trendy in heavy music. And you guys are still there. You're still doing it. You're playing a show right now. You just got back from a tour. You guys have a record that just came out. What's the recipe there for success? Like, what do you guys think you can chalk it up to?
I mean, I'm not really sure what the recipe is. I think it's just a matter of, you know, if you're really into music as like an art form and it's what drives you and what you're passionate about, you know, you'll do it for the rest of your life, you know. And what, you know, there's a lot of things that I think break bands apart, you know, when you are a band and you see a bunch of like up and coming bands, you know, blow up. First they're opening up for you and then they're like playing arenas and stuff. And
right.
That can, like, you know, I've never ever music as any kind of a competition. It's always just been about, you know, doing our thing and creating our shit. And if people like it, if they like it, if they don't, they don't, you know. But I think a lot of people aren't like that. And it's really, and, you know, even me saying I've never been competitive, of course, there's been times where I've been like, God damn, this shitty ass band got big. Fuck. I mean, you know, it definitely gets you. But I mean, like I said, it's not a competition. And if you don't view it as a competition, if you just view it as what it is, which is an art form, and then that you want to do.
Absolutely.
Do it for the rest of your life, no matter what.
You know, it started happening to me a while ago, probably you too, where there's like a band and they're blowing up and you're like, yeah, whatever, not really into it, but they're getting huge. And then you just kind of know that it's going to last for a couple years and then it's going to fall apart and you're still going to be where you're at. Has that happened to you now where you're kind of like, you can kind of just shake your head and walk away and be like, we're going to do the same thing. And you know what? In 5 years, we're still going to be playing the same venues we've been playing for the last whatever amount of years. We're still going to have people coming out and this band is going to be lucky if anyone gives a fuck. Like that whole idea now is like almost makes me, and I'm going to sound like a dick saying this, but it almost makes me kind of smile in a way now. And I'm like, oh yeah, your band's so fucking big and you're so popular and you don't want to bring my band on tour because we're too old. Well, guess what? Yeah. In 5 years, no one's going to give a fuck about you. I don't say it out loud.
Oh yeah.
But it happens, you know, and I'm sure.
Oh no, I mean, it's.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's inevitable when something, you know, has such a fast, steep rise that, you know, some of it is going to have a pretty brutal crash. I mean, we saw the whole metalcore thing happen. You know, I mean, we were like metalcore before metalcore, you know, like when it was like, you know, Integrity and Converge and Botch and Dead Guy and all that awesome stuff. And, and then this whole metalcore thing happened and then it kind of blew up and then it kind of died out. And then we saw this whole like deathcore thing kind of blow up. And that seems to be somewhat, you know, I mean, it's like, these things, you know, everything's cyclical and stuff comes and goes. It'll probably be, I mean, there's like, you know, now in LA, one of the biggest things going is the emo dance night. You know what I'm saying?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
There's the clubs just playing, you know, records of thousands of screamo. So.
Yeah. No, I know. It's,
you
it's,
know, I don't really know where I'm going with this, but yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, with you guys, being just basically being a punk band. I always thought you guys were a punk band that played metal, if that makes any sense at all. Just the way you guys operate, the like amount of humor you guys have in your shows and your videos and your like online, you know, presence. And that you just have this no bullshit kind of thing. I mean, that's what I think is the reason you guys have been able to stick it out for so long. Not only just putting out great record after great record, but I think that people see through that bullshit, especially older fans. And I think that that really is something that's kept you guys around.
Well, I think you nailed it. You know, we are, you know, at least Mike and I, we grew up in the DC punk hardcore scene. You know, it was, I didn't even really discover metal, to be honest, till after, you know, till I was like 17 or something. I was already super into punk rock and hardcore.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't really grow up listening to Metallica, Megadeth and stuff. I grew up listening to like Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins and stuff, then got into punk, then got into hardcore. And so the metal that I got into was, you know, Carcass, At the Gates,
right,
you know, Entombed, Dismember, all this kind of, you know, a little bit later stuff. So I think that's, but at the same time, you had Mike who grew up listening to like Pantera in, you know, rock, AC/DC, all that stuff. But, also, he transitioned to like punk hardcore, and then went back into like more extreme metal. So, but we definitely have that. You know, that's definitely our roots. And yeah, I think, you know, you can tell in a lot of different ways. I mean, you know, when you come on tour with us, we're not like, you know, oh shit. You know, if you tour with metal bands, they're like, okay, they take the dressing room. They don't give you shit. You know,
yeah,
like. You know, you're like sitting out in the parking lot, you know, while we're like, fuck it, this is a show. This is, you know, like everybody's, all the bands should be welcome to the same shit. You know what I mean?
But, you know, it's funny, like you talk about earlier talked about the jealousy thing that exists between bands. Like typically in metal, it's the worst. Like everyone's trying to outdo everyone else. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know you guys did like Ozfest, like. Some of the shit that goes on those tours is like just, it's just terrible, you know, and people are not cool and people are fucking dicks in some of these, you know, in some of those bigger metal bands just because they didn't grow up with punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever have any run-ins with those bands? Like, cause I know you guys did some pretty big metal tours.
I mean, we've had plenty of shit, you know, we've had, you know, we started doing metal tours with like, I guess our first metal tour was like Destruction or something in 2000. And it was a totally different world for us. You know, yeah. It was the first time we'd seen a tour bus, you know, first time for so much shit, you know, and just seeing how it operated was very different, you know, like the, oh, you know, you roll into the club and the band's set up and they're like, well, you know, this is where all our shit is, you know, figured out. And so that's often like meaning you play on the floor. Whereas like
right.
when we do a tour, it's very much the opposite. We just try to make everything work for everybody to make everyone show cool.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. Yeah, it's a different mentality, you know, I think. And I just think it stems from where you grow up. You know, and what your influences were and, you know, what the scene was like. And I mean, yeah, Washington, D.C., rich history of punk rock, hardcore, not really a huge metal scene. Am I wrong when
no.
I say that?
No, you're not. There really wasn't. I think the punk hardcore community was just so big there. There wasn't like much, I think, you know, a lot of metal shows would go to Baltimore. They were having a, you know, kind of a more thriving, they've always seemed to have kind of a more thriving metal scene than DC always did. But then, you know, 2000s or so, it all kind of just merged together, you know, and you ended up having all the, you know, like now it, like it is nowadays, but a little, you know, nowadays you'll see all kinds of kids at a show, you know, all kinds of, I mean, you know, all kinds of heavy music fans, you know. See.
Sure, sure. And it started.
Whereas,
it's yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's just kind of all come to melt together, which I personally really appreciate, you know.
Yeah, I think so. It's funny. Like I remember seeing like Lamb of God, you know, at Hellfest, which is, you know, like a hardcore festival, basically, and then all of a sudden they're one of the biggest metal bands, you know, in the world. It's kind of crazy, you know, that those kinds of things can happen and the lines get so blurred between styles of music. And I don't even know what Lamb of God is anymore. I used to think of them kind of like, you know, metalcore before it was metalcore in a way, kind of like you were talking about a little bit with those scenes, but I guess they were a little bit different. And, you know, it's just, you know, we could talk all day about that shit and it is interesting. But what to me is most interesting about talking to you is just that you guys have done it for this long, still thriving. You guys just got back from a U.S. tour with other, you know, Victory alumni, Ringworm, supporting you guys. How was that tour?
It was awesome, man. It was really sick. The package was really great. We got like a really, really bunch of like awesome bands together. We had Rotten Sound from Finland was really just mind-blowing, like
cool
classic, you know, brutal grind stuff. We had Rivers of Nile, who's a kind of a newer band with a little more of like an epic death metal-y sound. We had what were they called? Now I'm an asshole.
Hey, you're 37 years old. You can't remember Tombs. Every band you tour with anymore.
We had Tombs on the tour. Tombs on the tour, which was sick. Doing some pretty like black metal-y stuff. And,
nice. Cool.
And then, yeah, Ringworm, you know. We've been playing shows on and off with Ringworm throughout the years. So
yeah.
It was a great group of people. And just, yeah, super great tour, man. Like,
and how's it been on your...
Just, it kind of flew by.
Yeah, man. And how's it been on your voice, you know, doing this band now for, like, basically, like, 20 years? How is it on your voice? Has it taken a toll on your voice? You sound fine when you speak. You don't sound raspy at all. You know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, so we talk about singing sometimes and screaming. How's that been for you? Do you ever have trouble?
I don't really lose my voice too much anymore. If I lose my voice nowadays, it's not usually due to screaming. It's due to like not sleeping enough and partying too much or something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I used to lose it all the time. And I think you can kind of hear, you know, if you listen to the older, DH records, like I basically would get in the studio and scream as hard as I physically could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like till I was like, you know, about to puke and stuff. and it obviously like made my voice a little higher pitched, you know?
Yeah.
And around the Deliver Us era, I kind of like working with Devin Townsend. He was really kind of key in helping me learn to control my voice a little bit, because, you know, I never really, you know, he made me realize that when you don't push as hard, you know, you can have way more of a range, you know, or actually have a range, you know, whereas before it was just like that, you know, like one monotone kind of thing.
So yeah, you guys worked with so many different producers, some like actually pretty big names. Working with different producers, obviously, like, you know, producers you work with, they work with people that are singers, they work with people that are screamers, everything in between. What were some of the best producers you worked with, and were they able to help you with your voice?
I think Devin Townsend was certainly like, that was kind of like my first, you know, I kind of real, you know, just becoming aware of my voice. He was the guy that kind of, you know, like I was saying earlier, who kind of taught me how to control my voice. So, so he stood out as, you know, a really big impact. But I mean, you know, you take something away from every producer you work with, you know, and, sure. I learned lots of stuff from every single one, you know, and some of that I learned was what not to do, you know, and that's a crucial part of learning as well, you know.
Exactly. So,
but yeah, I mean, it's good to like. I think it's good to go around and find, you know, your ideal producer. You know, I think we really, with the current lineup and the current sound and everything, I think we really kind of nailed it with getting Kurt Ballou to do it.
Sure.
I think that was really kind of like a perfect union, because he, you know, we're an older band. We kind of know what we want on some level, but we still want someone's input sonically and, you know, to some point songwritery, but, you know, we more like we're cool. We got the songs, you know, like we just need someone to record it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, Kurt Ballou is amazing, and like obviously all the work Converge has done for so long has been incredible. You know, but your guitar player Mike, he's a producer too. How come he doesn't produce your records?
I mean, he always does. He does, like, we do pre-production and stuff with him, and you know, he ends up kind of co-producing it, you know, like,
right.
You know, the new record, I think it says produced by Kurt Ballou and Darkest Hour.
Right.
Should probably just say produced by Kurt Ballou and Mike Schleibon, because he's always been the guy that, you know, the organized guy, you know, the business guy and the sure. organized guy. So, I think, you know, he probably likes getting someone else's input just like anybody else would, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I think, yeah.
I mean, you know, like I do some recording and stuff too. I've, you know, produced like two demos, but, you know, but I wouldn't want to record myself. You know, it's never the same as having someone to like bounce shit right off of, you know?
Totally. There's, yeah, go ahead.
And, you know, there's just, you know, Mike knows that Kurt has more experience with all this stuff too. So, you have to like be able to let your guard up and let people, you know, get what they think is the best sound out of you, you know?
No, I think so. And I think not only that, another thing people don't talk about is just how a producer manages, you know, the personalities in a band too. You know, he's got to kind of be everyone's friend, you know, and allow people to get along. Cause you know, there's always like going to be some arguments, or you know, at least heated discussions at worst about what, you know, oh, how should this part go, or how should this screaming pattern be, or, you know, do these lyrics make sense, or, you know, whatever. Like, that's always going to happen with any band. So that's a big
Absolutely.
Part of the producer.
I mean,
so if when your producer's in the band, it's a lot harder.
Yeah. I mean, that is another, that's a very crucial, you're right, that's a very crucial producer role, is to be like a tiebreaker, an outside, you know, mm-hmm. an outside opinion. You, even if you, you know, if you have a couple of people in the band that think should go one way and a couple of people think should go the other way,
yeah,
you know, you no. say, all right, Kurt, what do you think? Mm-hmm. I think this, and then, okay, problem solved.
Yeah, totally. Well, the other thing too is, not to rephrase, the other question I have for you is, you know, working with all these different producers and being a screamer, like, I was just in the studio with my band doing some screaming yesterday, and I find, like, do you do, like, a whole passage of a song when you record? Do you go, like, do you take, like, a part and do a verse? Do you do it, like, line by line? Like, how do you generally do...
I've done it pretty much every way imaginable, but the way I do it now, and my favorite way to do it is to do as much as possible in one take, you know?
Yeah.
And almost, you know, most of the songs on the new record are, they're not one take at all, but they're, you know, but I do as much as I can in one take, you know? And I just think it sounds a little more natural, you know, like we've had records where they just copy and paste the shit and, mm-hmm. yeah, it just doesn't, I don't know. It just sounds, it sounds like it's copy and pasted. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound as real. It doesn't have the emotion, you know, of like slight, you know, reflections or inflections in your voice or whatever, you know? So, what was the question?
No, that was the question. How do you do the, you know, how do you break up, you know, when you do a song in the studio? Cause I find the same thing. Yeah. I don't really know. And, you know, the other thing too with screaming is like, yeah, you can, like with singing, and a lot of times these days in recording, you know, you'll copy a chorus. Like almost every band does this. They'll sing a chorus, and if the chorus is good, they'll just copy it to the second chorus and the third chorus. That's very common. But I find with screaming, it's like each scream is so unique. Like there's always a little way, the breathing's always a little different in the way the like the plosives come out, and there's like, you know, there's these little things. I find you're right. Like when you try to copy and paste one screaming part to another, it sounds so mechanical because there really is a lot of character. Like screaming is all character. There's no pitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the most part. So that is an interesting point.
Yeah. It's, like I said, we've done that before, and that's one of the things I learned that I don't like, you know, and on the new record, there's no copying and pasting whatsoever.
Yeah,
no. It's all. So that's the way I foresee it, you know, to keep going in the future.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, man.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The other thing too, like you brought up something earlier that I wanted to address, like about how you used to scream really high and really hard. Back in those days, you know, everybody was trying to be like at the Gates. Everybody had this like sort of higher screaming approach, I feel. And I feel like the lower screaming, at least at the time you're making your first couple records, it kind of like wasn't cool. Do you remember that when like the low guttural stuff was kind of lame? And then
yeah,
it sort
I mean,
of became
I think,
more in fashion a little bit, like.
Yeah, like that, you know, I think Black Dahlia was kind of a pioneer of bringing that more. You know, I always say that, like, I always feel like a strong kinship with those guys because they're very very similar to us. You know, like mm-hmm.
Sure, especially their personalities.
Brian and Trevor, you know, Brian and Trevor came from the like the hardcore scene, just like Mike and I did.
Yeah,
and I feel like they. Like basically we went the more at the Gates route and they went the more Carcass route mm-hmm. is always how I've like seen that, you know? And, but yeah, it's, I guess there wasn't too many like super low growly stuff back then. I mean,
no,
there was always the, you know, Cannibal Corpses and Deicides and, you know, Morbid Angels doing it the whole time or whatever. But as far as in the, like, you know,
I know,
core hardcore scene or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, you're right. There was kind of, I think Black Dahlia kind of like pioneered that, using that, you know.
Yeah,
and they do it amazingly. I mean, they're one of my favorite. They're one of my favorites.
Yeah,
so
they're awesome, man. They're awesome. Yeah, like I remember the first time I heard your band, or not the first time, but one of the first times you had a video where you actually recorded your video of you guys playing in your own van, which is
Our first video.
That's your first video, which I love the idea. It's one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember it or whatever, and if anyone's seen it. I just always thought it was hilarious and a great way to make a video, probably on no budget because Victory probably didn't give you any money. Talk me through how that came about, who had the idea, and how that happened, because it's a super funny video.
Our friend Sharon, I think her name is Sharon Mooney. It's been a long time since we hung out. But she was a friend of ours who directed it, and if we gave her any money, it was very little, because it was out of our pocket. But it was kind of like, it was kind of a mix of people's ideas. Like, our old bass player, Paul, had a pretty good stake in like the in coming up with that video, but we had like our roadie buddy Hunter, we were like, oh, we wanted to be like a kind of a spin-off of like an 80s video or something, whereas this is like Mom finds his DH tape and kicks him out and he freaks out, and then, you know, he ends up like rocking out in the van. So it was very much like, you know, a takeoff of that, like a Twisted Sister kind of video or something cheesy like that.
No, I like that, and I like that it really spoke to like your personalities of not taking yourself so seriously, whereas like you could have made a video, you know, this is the whole concept of the interview, if there is one, is this whole, you know, this whole idea of you guys doing this. It's like you guys could have made some shitty, really cheesy video where you guys are just wearing all black and looking serious into the camera, you know. And we wouldn't be talking about that video right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we've made those videos too.
But, of course, yeah, of know, course but, you have. I know. The, I mean, you have to,
right,
eventually.
Those aren't the ones that that I think resonate with people as much.
Yeah.
As when they can see, you know, like the, you know, I mean, we're living in the day and age where people have complete like transparency of the artist that they like. You know, they're looking at their Twitters and their Instagrams and, you know, sending direct messages back and forth with their fans and stuff, you know, or whatever. It's like a totally, totally different world, you know? So,
and with you, like, in terms of that shit, coming from a different world and now having this just be a thing, how much of you guys, I know you guys have embraced some of it. Like, I know you guys are doing, Mike's doing podcasts. You guys have like a Darkest Hour beer, you know, all this, like these things. How much of that are you stoked about doing all that? Or how much of it is like, I just kind of want to like make records and tour and not really have to worry about my social status? Because it seems like Mike is more of the front man of the band than you are in some ways.
Well, he's definitely the mouth, you know, you know, of the band. And he, you know, it's me and him started together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's his band. You know, it's my band too. But
yeah.
You know, I don't really know how to describe it. But what were we saying?
I know I asked you like a lot of questions at one time.
Mike. Yeah, I mean, it's he also he's just, you know, the person who like talks the most gets heard the most. You know what I mean? And it's funny. I've always thought that like, I've always found it interesting that, to me, guitar players usually seem to be the loudest, most outgoing people. And a lot of times the singers are, you know, just these kind of like laid back, you know, whatever people. And then they get on stage and scream at people. It's an interesting
dichotomy there. Would you say your personality is more like introverted, at least like when you're not on stage?
I would say so. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to say I don't like doing interviews but I don't normally do them. And I mean, this is a comfortable one because Because you're a lead singer, and I can just tell, you know?
Right. Well, that's the other thing. And people know they can't bullshit me, which is fun. And I know. So that makes it fun, too, you know, that we can just have a conversation. Like, I don't know how to interview somebody. I just talk, you know?
Yeah. The last interview I did was a podcast with Mike, and he was interviewing me. So it was also totally cool and comfortable.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But, yeah, it is interesting. Like, I've... Something else I've noticed lead singer wise is it's almost always the person I connect to in the bands that we tour with is the lead singer, you know, like this lead singer's club kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like 9 times out of 10, that's the person whose number I end up getting or, you know, end up hanging out with later. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's true. I find drummers have the biggest kinship. In bands, I always see like drummers talking about gear and asking each other what fucking like drum heads they use or whatever, like shit I could just care less about. You know, but I find sometimes actually some lead singers, and these aren't the ones that I end up giving my phone number to, some of them though, they're like seems to be some kind of competition or something, like you're the enemy. Like,
it's, oh, sure.
And that those, you know, I hate that idea that happens between lead singers, but you're right.
I mean, if I ever get that vibe from someone, I immediately just think they're a dipshit and cut off, you know, communication with them. So I only have a kinship with down to earth singers, you know.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
But it's funny. I think there is a reasoning behind that too, and it's because, you know, we go through the same things. Kind of like emotionally when we're performing, you know, where, you know, it's not like, you know, you're the one with the mic, you're the one in the front, you know, it's not like all eyes are on you, but, you know, you are like right there in the front and you are using your voice, which is another thing that makes, you know, lead singers so self-conscious, I think, is because your voice is your voice and it's the only voice that sounds like that unless you mimic somebody else or whatever. But, you know, it's not like you can grab a different amp and change it up or whatever. You know, it's like you're stuck with what you got. And I think that it coming from inside your body as opposed to just like making it on an instrument just makes it kind of a more emotional experience in general. Like it's
a lot more personal.
You know, when I get off stage, like I need like, you know, 5 minutes to just like chill out and like decompress because I'm like, holy fuck, that was goddamn intense, you know?
Yeah.
You know, exchange of, shit there with the audience, you know? So.
Right. I mean, you write most of the lyrics, I assume.
Yeah, I write. Well, I write all the lyrics nowadays. Like when we first started, Mike was writing some, I was writing some, and then we'd have other members come in every once in a while and do like one or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess around Undoing Ruin is when I started writing pretty much all of them.
And is it, 9 records in, is it getting harder and harder to write lyrics?
It is getting harder and harder to write lyrics, especially because, you know, we have a certain, you know, like vibe with the lyrics. Like to me, the lyrics have always been this kind of like, you know, like therapeutic way to kind of get out all the negative shit inside me, you know, like and so that being said, you're pretty, it's not really necessarily one dimensional, but your dynamic is limited because it's not like I'm going to be up there like singing about flowers and stuff, which would be funny, I guess, but you know, it just doesn't work. And you know, there's only, so, you know, you're partially limited when you're screaming extreme metal, you know. Your vocabulary is somewhat limited because,
sure.
and then add like doing 8-9 records on top of that. Yeah, I definitely, you know, write stuff down, and I'm like, ah, shit, that's a lyric on another record.
I know. That's so funny.
Let me
bring
change
that up.
It a little bit, and you know.
That's funny because we're recording, working on our eighth record right now. And a couple times I'm writing lyrics and I'll write a line, I'll be like, that's cool. And I'll have to Google it to make sure I didn't use it already. Because I can't remember. I wrote like 100 songs or whatever. I can't remember every single one.
And dude, I have to Google my lyrics all the time because I, especially like we just did this for our last record, we did this Indiegogo crowd sourcing thing. And one of the perks we did was I wrote a bunch of handwritten lyrics out for people. I ended up having to do like 90 or something of them.
Oh my God, what a nightmare.
So people picked some pretty obscure songs, you know? And I was just sitting there like, how the fuck does that song go? And then I'll Google the lyrics and I'll look at the lyrics on the whatever lyric site, and they're like totally fucking wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but so many of those lyric sites just...
Especially with the screaming, man, because it's hard to understand.
Yeah, and then once one person posts the wrong lyrics, then all the other sites post them or whatever. And
yep,
it's really funny. So I'd look up the lyrics and I'd be like, ah, shit, that's not right. And then I'd just have to sit there and listen to the song and pause it every 5 seconds.
You know what's funny about that is there's been a couple times where actually we had a record come out, like the record got leaked. I don't remember which record it was, and so somebody had, written out all the lyrics, what they thought I was saying. And a couple of the lyrics that were wrong were actually cooler than the lyrics I'd actually said. So I just went with those ones. So they're actually like not what I said, but in the booklet, because it came out after.
That's amazing.
So someone, whoever out there, actually wrote my lyrics for me, but not really.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
So that's really funny. But man, that's I can't believe you did 90 lyric sheets. Like we did a pre-order once where we had like a 14 track record, so I was gonna do 14 of them, but then the label fucked up and like didn't put in the like stock, so they like kept selling, and I think they sold like 42 before it got taken down, and I did 42 like handwritten lyric sheets, and I thought like my arm was gonna fall off, man. It took forever.
Yeah, that shit hurts after a while, man. It's crazy.
And I just started getting messier and messier, and they got shittier and shittier.
Yeah, mine. My handwriting is already really, really awful. So, but whatever. When I am writing lyrics, it's usually in this kind of like frantic state. So, it is kind of representative of what it's like when I write lyrics, you know.
Yeah. No, I absolutely, man.
Because I don't know about you, but that's, for me, it's almost always like that. It's like, you know, either I sit there for an hour and nothing happens and I get frustrated, or I sit down and everything just like pours out and I've got like a whole song in like 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, it is crazy how that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's always the best stuff is always the stuff that comes out like that. Just like it's like flowing out of you and you don't even know. You can't even like describe it, what's happening. It's just like, there's a line, and they all rhyme, and they all work, and they're all, it is a crazy thing.
Yeah, man, it's like your brain takes over your hand and just puts a bunch of weird shit down, you know?
So, so record number 9 out now. You guys did some crowdfunding. Is that the first time you've done that?
That is the first time we've done that.
And how did you feel about that? I mean, obviously coming from a background where that wasn't a thing when you guys started the band, I'm sure if someone was like, hey, yeah, when you do your 9th record, like, this is going to be the way it's done, you wouldn't have believed them. Like, how was that approach, and are you feeling pretty good about it?
I feel good about it, yeah. I mean, it was mixed feelings at first, when they were first, when our management was first throwing the idea out there. Because, you know, it's kind of like, I think some bands have done it to the point where it's kind of like this cheesy thing, and they're like, we basically wanted it to be like a make it more like a pre-order type situation, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And also just like, you know, when you think about it, it is kind of, you know, even though we ended up putting it on a label because we didn't want it to kind of fade away into obscurity. Yeah. You know, it is a pretty punk rock way to make a record, to self, you know, self-fund it and have people that actually care about it, people that are already, you know, emotionally invested in your band and that are going to buy it anyways, you know? So it's like, why the fuck not? I don't know if we'd do it again, just because it was kind of a pain in the ass. But
logistically a pain in the ass?
Legit, yeah. And, you know, to be honest, that was pretty much, you know, I can't complain because that was almost all on Mike, you know, so.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the good thing about, but then when Southern Lord decided or asked us if they could put it out, first of all, we were stoked because it's one, you know, they're like one of the sickest metal labels out right now. But they were really cool, and they ended up fulfilling like a lot of our obligations for that. You know, we got all the stuff together and gave it to them, and they ended up like shipping it out for us and everything. So they helped out a lot with that too. But it was interesting, you know. Like I think you have to keep an open mind if you're in a band about what's happening. And I think if you are one of these kind of, you know, angry old dudes that, you know, can't keep up with the times, then, you know, you're just gonna fade away, you know?
Right. Absolutely, man. That's absolutely agree with you. Cool. So you guys, what's this project you're doing now? You're going to Vegas. What's the show? What's the band?
It's a band I've been doing for a couple of years now out here in LA, and it's called The Primals, and we're kind of like, I'm the singer, guitarist, primary songwriter, and my friend Andrew, who's also from DC, who grew up in the hardcore scene as well, as is the drummer, and our friend Chad, from a band called Dead to Fall, is
oh yeah,
you remember them?
Victory,
yeah,
Victory alumni, yes.
Yep. So he's out here too, and I reconnected with him. He plays bass with us. And another friend from DC, Nikhil, is out playing guitar with us now. But we're not, you know, hardcore. We're kind of like, it's kind of like a mix of, like I was saying, the stuff I grew up with was more like Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins kind of stuff. It's kind of like a mix of, you know, that kind of stuff with punk and hardcore kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, but yeah, we have... we have like one demo out right now, and we have actually have like a whole new second record ready to go that we're going to try to record in the next few months.
Is there
months.
A link you can plug right now so people can find out about the Primals?
Yeah, I don't know what the link is, but we're on Spotify.
Okay, it's on Spotify. Cool.
It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes, and it's on Bandcamp.
Okay.
Just don't confuse. At some point there was another The Primals from Los Angeles.
Oh, but, great.
so we're the one with the, like, you know, the weird painting as the cover.
Perfect. that's
but yeah,
funny.
So that's been a really cool thing for me. And interestingly enough, like, I think, it's had you know, something else. It's all like singing with this band, you know, and mm-hmm. a little bit of screaming here and there, but it's mostly singing, and I think it's kind of had like an impact on DH in a weird way, because, you know, our last record before this one, the self-titled one, it was our first with Travis, our first with Aaron Deal, and so we kind of had this new band, and we were kind of, it was almost like we were fully rediscovering our sound, so we were going all over the place. There was, you know, clean singing all over that record, yeah. And all sorts of stuff, and you know, I love singing pretty, you know, but I kind of like learned through doing that record and through doing my other stuff that it's not exactly, I don't really feel like it has much place in Darkest Hour. I feel like,
yeah,
Darkest Hour is and has always been, you know, dark, aggressive, angry, you know, metallic hardcore music, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that that's what people love about the band. I think that's what people want to hear about the band. And so it's cool. Like I found like another outlet for, you know, my pretty singing voice. So
Right. That's perfect. And I mean, I think, you know, you've been doing this same band for so long. It's great to expand on, you know, music and do other things. So that's awesome. How did you end up in LA? You live in LA now, from growing up in DC. How did you move out there?
I ended up out here because I moved to New York from DC six and, was living there for about 5 years. Was doing like a little like psych rock band with some friends up there and stuff. And, had a cool job at an art gallery and stuff, and had a pretty sweet little New York life. And then around like the 2008 financial collapse, like I lost my job and stopped playing with the guys that I was playing with, and I was just kind of like getting over not being able to escape the city. You know, I didn't have a car or anything, and New York right. is just, you know, as you know, it's just nonstop city. You know, there's no escape from people or anything.
Right.
And I came out here. My mother moved out here like a while back, and I came out and visited her for a week. And I don't know, I was just like driving around. I was driving up the coast and like through the canyons, and I was like, "Fuck, this is what I want," you know.
Right.
So yeah, just kind of packed everything up and moved out here.
So you're are you still doing working a job on the side as well as the band?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we still make money when we go on tour and stuff, and when we make records and have a budget and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'll do all sorts of crap to make money. You know, I did. When I was first out here, I was doing process serving. That was really interesting. Like what's that movie? Pineapple Express. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah
serving
yeah.
people papers.
Yeah.
you know, doing like delivery jobs and. I used to did like random carpentry jobs and crap. So yeah, I just kind of pick up stuff here and there.
Oh, cool.
When I'm not touring, I record some bands sometimes. This past year I did a few podcast jingles.
Oh, really?
That was that was really cool. So
yeah, it's very cool.
Starting to get into a little more of that, you know, just composing and stuff. So.
That's fantastic, man. That sounds awesome. Well, I don't take up too much of your time. What's coming up? You guys are going to Europe, Parkway Drive. That should be a pretty big tour.
I saw like a picture of their Munich show, and there's like 6,000 people there. And
yeah, they're insanely big.
They have like a rotating Tommy Lee drum riser. So.
Have you toured with them before?
We've toured with them before. Yeah, we toured with them. We had them supporting us in 2008 in the States. I think that was kind of right around when they were like starting to get big or whatever. Yeah. So we're buds with them.
Yeah, they're cool. They're like the kind of band, and I know them because the first time we ever went to Australia, we slept in the singer's parents' house. They were on tour, but they let us stay at their parents' house, and we slept in the garage. And like his dad's like a doctor and like took us out on his motorcycle, and they're like the coolest like little hippie like vegan family. Like it's awesome.
Wow.
So those are like totally like a metal band that's a big, big metal band that totally comes from punk rock and gets it too. So so I think that's a good fit for you guys. That's sick.
Yeah, it's always cool to get up there and, you know, play in front of thousands of people.
Yeah, it's gonna be really fun, man. That's great. So
interestingly enough, like I get less nervous when there's like 5 or 10 or 50,000 people.
I know. It's so weird, you know? Man. When it's just like a sea of people, you're just kind of like whatever. It's not. It's like not individuals anymore, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you play like a basement show. And there's like 20 people and like two of them are like hot chicks. You're like, oh, is this girl like looking at me? What's going on? Like you're all self-conscious. Like for me, I'm absolutely the same way as you. Like the smaller the show, the more nervous I am.
Yeah, totally. That's the way it is, man. It's crazy.
It's totally because
you kind
crazy.
Of like, you know, when you're doing those big concerts, to get back to the concert thing, when you're, you know, it's a different kind of show. You know, you're more up there, you know, vibing with yourself than you know and projecting that outwards than you are, you know, vibing at people individually and having someone like, you know, having someone, you know, kick you in the head or.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of we played this festival in Germany. It's called Vainstream. And,
oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, it's a really good festival. They do a really, really, really good job. And it's, like, pretty big. I'm not sure if it's, like, 30,000 or it's, like, it's not, like, one of the huge ones.
When we did it, it was, like, 20,000, 30,000.
Yeah, it's like middle of the road, but still big. And yeah. When you're on the main stage and stuff. And it's funny because I totally ate shit. Like, I was trying to step up onto the, like, riser. And I just, didn't get my foot all the way up. And I tripped and I totally just, like, rolled. And
Damn. And
I was like laughing at myself and like couldn't sing because I was still laughing and everyone on the side stage, you know, all my friends are laughing at me and everything. And, you know, I don't know. I kind of shook it off and didn't care. But man, for the next year, every time we played that part of Germany, every kid was like, oh, I see you fall. I see you fall on the stage.
Oh, the Germans don't forget, dude.
No, man. No, they don't. They don't. No, my favorite thing is the review. We call it the review, where the Germans, they come up to you after the show and they go, John, pretty good show last time, much better.
Oh, we've had the exact same conversation in our band many, many times. You know,
it's such a German thing. I love it.
This new record is you know, it's okay. It's a bit shit. It's a bit shit compared to last record. You know, you're like, oh, well, I'm glad you like something.
Yeah, I know. It's so true. And we have a lot of German listeners to this podcast. So hello, Germans. We do love you.
Well, I hope you realize we're not making fun of you. And we kind of are, but we love the Germans.
We do love them. And they're like the
it's
best.
Good fun.
And they're the best. Probably the best rock music market, like in the world. Like they actually care, and the reason
and
they
some
say
of the
this
most
thing,
loyal. I think some of the oh, most yeah. loyal metal fans,
totally
in existence. You know,
and they say this to you because they actually care. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they
oh,
actually
yeah.
listen. Because
totally,
a lot of places they don't really listen. They're just kind of there because something to do. And
yeah, or they just want to hear themselves talk like most
oh,
people.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true, too. Well, hey, dude, thanks for taking the time. Anything else to add? I know you got the new record out now. People could check it out and come see you on tour. Anything else?
Yeah, no, that's it. Check it out. Check out the new record on Southern Lord and hope everybody likes it.
Yeah, man.
Out there in podcast land.
And have a good time in Vegas. I hope the show is a lot of fun and you use your pretty voice.
Yeah, man. I'll be singing pretty.
All right, man. Thanks, John.
Sweet. Well, yeah, thanks
All
for
best,
having
man.
Me, man.
Of course.
All
take
right.
care, man.
Take care. All right, bye.
Thanks, dude. So there it is with John. What a dude. I feel like he warmed up to me as the interview went along. And I am a huge fan of Dark Star, so this was really cool for me. Next week, we will be back with another guest, a female guest. I'm super excited about this one. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on anything. Now, it's hard for me to pick a Darkest Hour song to play, but my story earlier in the episode where I talk about seeing the band for the first time and never really seeing a band like that before, a band that married punk rock and metal and hardcore all together like Darkest Hour did, and this song is one that they played at their show, and I'm going to play it right now. It's an oldie but a goodie from So Sedated, So Secure. Here is An Epitaph on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
Silence!
Hey, you're still here. I almost forgot, but I've been talking about all the great podcasts that are on the Jabberjaw Media Network, which is the little thing you hear at the beginning of the episode every week. And actually, this podcast I'm going to talk about this week, I was just on it, just about a month or 2 months ago. It's called The Future of What. It is super, super cool. And here's what I have to say about it. We all listen to music, but what's happening behind the scenes can be a mystery, even for insiders. Get a look into the recording industry with The Future of What podcast. Each week, host and Kill Rockstars president, Portia Sabin, delves into a topic of interest to music industry professionals and fans alike by discussing important issues with great people who work every day to help artists succeed. Upcoming episodes include conversations with Open Mike Eagle, Top Shelf Records, and a peek at how songs make it onto hit shows like Atlanta. Find The Future of What online at killrockstars.com/thefutureofwhat or just search for it on your favorite podcast app. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.